From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Welcome in to Bob After Dark. Count Panic here as we get situated inside the Shed TV studios here in Hammond, Indiana. Firing up the old Zoom right now to see what it brings, and we'll put the old sound on too as well and see if we could hear Bob. I just see Bob popped in my screen. Bob, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
I could hear you as well. Let me turn you up a little bit, but I was just introducing the folks, making sure we're on Zoom here. So, Bob, for the podcast people, forget like that never happened. It was not me bringing the show, because it's going to be Bob right now on a count of three, a two, a one.
Oh, hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoy... I am the host of the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my brother, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey there, Bob. Yes, sans the cape. You know, I'm just, it's a casual Tuesday here in the studio, so no cape today. But yes, excited to be back here on another episode of Bob After Dark. For the technology of Zoom, Bob, on this chilly, chilly Tuesday, we bring you inside here. That's amazing what we could do, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say so. Count, we have not been together in a little bit. It's been a weird 2025, and I'm just really excited I was able to sit down and get this done.
Yeah, I mean, hey, we're here. You got your little background up there. It's amazing. Got to give a shout-out to Art. He just sent a message on the old Facebook app. He's ready with his spirits, and he's watching Bob After Dark on the Jed TV. So shout out to Art. We're going to have to talk about that soon here, but we'll get the show rolling a little bit. But we had quite the night yesterday, didn't we, Bob?
100%.
Yeah. And we lived to tell about it.
Oh, 100%. You know, what was I going to say? You know, last night was a lot of fun, Count, which we'll talk about here in just a moment. Yeah. And then we're all here and excited to be here. Sorry, folks. I am out of breath as I was rushing to get on the air here just to get on time.
Were you outside?
What?
Were you outside or?
No, but I had to run from one room to the next to get it ready to go.
Oh, because you have a little studio set up there. That's why you can't just go.
I do. Yep. I had to get everything set up, and I was running into a little bit of technical difficulties, but we're all good.
You made it happen, Bob.
I sound good, correct?
Yeah, you sound fine. I mean, you sound loud and clear here. I'm sure it's projecting.
That's 100%. Yeah, then we're good to have it then.
Yeah. As long as the people could hear you, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's, radio, audio, but the visuals, as Art's watching right now, the visuals, you could see everything in high definition, high resolution, Bob. Who could have predicted this 100 years ago when they started WJLB?
Amazing. Right.
Amazing.
Amazing. So Bob After Dark is your weekly show where we talk about legends, lore, and the supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course Count Panic's favorite recipe for pie.
Favorite pie. Our favorite recipe for a pie. I don't know. Favorite pie. Jeez, boy, Bob, putting me on the spot here. I mean, banana cream chocolate, French silk, right? That's a good one as well. If we're going to the other side of things, a nice blueberry pie, possibly. Bob, those got to be in the top three right there, right? How about you? Oh, what's your favorite pie?
French silk.
French silk, yes, that's that's up there. Can't be
French silk. French silk pie is, I would say, is my favorite type of pie. You know, it. I'm also a fan of like raspberry.
Raspberry pie.
Mm,
how about pie? Pumpkin pie?
Dear, if the season's correct.
You can't eat pumpkin pie in the summertime, right?
No, it is not. That is not the same.
I think it's frowned upon or illegal in some states. I don't know.
100%.
Yeah.
Calm panic. I want to say that you and I did something really amazing last night.
Yeah, we did, Bob.
Together, actually. It was a lot of fun. You and I went on a paranormal investigation, me, you, Pete, and Steve, to Club Cuyahoga in East Chicago, Indiana.
That we did. You know, it kind of started, the ball was rolling here when, I believe, and maybe Bill Drapak is listening, because I guess he heard some stories of Club Cuyahoga. And then, of course, John, loyal listener John, you know, brought it once again, saying, hey, maybe you guys should go out there. We hit up Art, a fan of the show. Again, he's watching right now on the Jed TV. Art is a member over there at Club Cuyahoga. I was like, I said, Art, what'd you hear? Can we make this happen? Now, they had, years ago, they had a couple ladies come out and do a little investigation, and they got some great footage of a door there. He showed us a door in the hallway that just kind of opened and closed, and the light came on as well. And that was stunning video evidence. And Bob, I passed that around to the group, and we're like, "Well, we should get in there and see what's going on." And Bob, I have to admit, we had some hits yesterday. You could say nothing like that video evidence, but from what we saw and what we gathered from the equipment, and Pete probably could expound more on this, but. What we got, I would say, is a pretty nice little investigation we had yesterday.
Oh, 100% count. So we had a bunch of different equipment out. We did a spirit box session, which was a lot of fun, meaning that we sat down and we would play through the radio and let the radio signals go by really quick on our tool to make things kind of work. And then we also had... We did the sessions with the REM pods, which means we set them up, and if things light up, or we see if they can make things light things up, that's where all of the interesting results of that might be. We had our K2 meters, which measures the fluctuations in energy. It was a lot of fun. We think we got some interesting results. The SLS cameras were picking up on figures that weren't there. In case you guys don't know what those are, it's the camera that sets up to do the stick figures.
Stick figures. And now this is probably the craziest evidence. I mean, craziest equipment we got, or I should say, you guys got, Pete's got. But you point the camera, and if there's nothing in the room, it might be just there's nobody standing there, but yet a figure pops up, and we've had that happen multiple times yesterday. One was a giant of a figure. Must have been maybe a tall past club member or whatnot, but and then there was a figure that was kind of like on the floor at some point too, which is kind of eerie. Because, and I think too, most of all, Bob, the theme of that one room we were in, that's where they held their meetings, they conducted their business, and it seemed like it was very a business oriented spirit, would you say? From what we've gathered.
It was. We had the yes or no REM pod out, and when we sat it up on the table, because we didn't know where we were at, we were setting up where the members only are, which, by the way, in case you guys are curious what Club Cuyahoga was, it's like almost like a moose lodge or like an elk lodge or something like that, except there's only one location. It's not like where
right there
the
in
moose
East Chicago,
is.
Yeah.
Yep, there's only one, and it's right there in East Chicago.
Since the 1930s, that one, we were told, was built in 1976 on the boulevard, and they do a lot of great things for the community as well. So those guys are really still going strong there and doing some good in this region. But, yeah, when we went there, we really didn't know exactly what we would encounter. But as you said, Bob, that room where the business was conducted, it seemed like a very business-oriented spirit that was there.
Oh, 100%. It was really funny because the thing was messing with the REM pods going yes or no. And then we found out later that the area that we set up at is where the officers sit for the meetings. And then they open it up for all the members to kind of be around them.
And that's kind of where the figures were in our frame, too, which is kind of interesting. I mean, they were standing at that table, picked up one sitting at the table, and nothing was there, Bob. It was just a... You know, if you take a camera away, you couldn't see anything.
What was interesting was we had an experience where it was we were using the Obulus, which is it's a little box with two antennae on top, and the idea is it's got a bunch of words programmed into the box, and if something wants to communicate with the box, so the box, you know, can speak out loud. It was funny because the word milk popped up on there. And I didn't say anything because sometimes those you know, you take the box for a grain of salt with what the words mean. You never know. So I went and I showing the gentleman some of the different officers and the different people that were there last night that were hanging out with us. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, sometimes you get weird words that just don't make sense, like the word milk. And it was funny because Art looked at me and the gentleman that let us come into the club and do the investigation. And he was like, oh, well, there was a gentleman who used to sit in here and he would drink what he called mother's milk, which was shots of rum chata.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing. Even when we were at the old WGLB studios, some random words would pop up on there. We didn't know what they kind of meant, but they kind of had a eerie connection back to the spot. So that was interesting. And then down the hall, too, because, you know, there's several rooms in there. And one of the rooms had a door. And beyond that door was the old office there of a gentleman. I'm not, you know, I don't want to say the names out loud here. That's I'm just talking about spirits in general. But, you know, some Steve's meter, when he pointing at that door, and I don't know what was beyond that door, just an office, Bob, but it was going off like crazy.
Right, 100%.
And it was, you know, the rest of the room, nothing. And then right when he pointed at that door, just spike into the red, Bob, spike into the red, which means what? I guess for the layman's term out there, what does it mean when that machine goes all red?
It's the. Oh, geez, I just smacked my microphone. Sorry, guys. EVP machine, the EMF detector checks spikes in the electric magnetic field.
Okay.
So the idea is that if something with an electrical charge or energy that we can't see could get picked up on that, and it's a real-life tool that contractors use all the time to find, like, exposed and loose wires.
You could buy this at a Home Depot right now.
What's that?
You could buy this at a Home Depot right now.
I believe you can actually buy a K2 meter from a Home Depot. It would make sense.
Start your own investigation team.
That and a laser thermometer, which I think you could buy at the Home Depot,
They got several ghost hunting pieces of equipment there.
I mean, wherever it works, right?
And then also beyond that, Bob, a slight faint scratch at the door, too, when that was going. And I didn't scratch the door. I know Pete didn't scratch the door. I saw your hands. It wasn't scratching the door. And Steve wasn't scratching the door. So that was kind of eerie as well. Now, some may say, well, was that maybe a mouse? But that was just the eerie time for a mouse to be scratching.
Because I knocked on the door.
Yeah.
And then come to find out that that was the member's office because he was the president. Yeah. And he didn't let anybody come in there.
Well, yeah,
it's been pretty much sealed up since his unfortunate passing. And so definitely an interesting experience in that room, too.
And then, Bob, we got to give a shout out to Don Bernacki from Crown Point because he taught us this old trick at the old Crown Point jail cell. When you play somewhat a game of poker or whatnot, a card game with the spirits there, and we did that at the old jail cell. You know, we kind of did that yesterday at Club Cayuga, too, as well, kind of taking that knowledge and playing a hand of cards with the spirits. And, interesting enough, the spirit won a couple times. You want to explain how that worked?
I call it the Bernacki experiment.
The Bernacki experiment, that's what we're calling.
By the way, I just made that up name right now. It's you toss out a couple cards, especially if you're in an area where cards were prominent, which this is a club, so they play their pinochle and poker, whatever they're gonna do. And you deal out five cards or however many cards, one for each person, you deal one out for the spirit, and then you go for the high card. And the idea is that you turn on the K2 meter and see if you could get a spike with the cards. And it was interesting because before we even entered that room, we had a stick figure in the door kind of motioning for us to come inside.
That was interesting, too.
It was interesting.
The figure was inviting.
Exactly. So it just seemed like it wanted us to come play cards with them. So we, you know, that's what we did. I dealt out the high card and, you know, lo and behold, it did the trick, and it got a couple correct. It was at first when I was dealing them face down, and then what it was as we started dealing them face up just to see if it could recognize the cards as they were faced up. And it was interesting because the K2 meter did spike during the tall card, which means Steve owed the the spirit of beer, because he did say that if he made the K2 meter spike.
I got to remind Art about that. Hopefully they did that last night, but I'm not sure.
If not, that's on them for not leaving out the beer, because they were supposed to do that.
We you know, men of our word here at the end of the day. But yeah, that was interesting too as well, Bob. Hey, we'll get back to that, but we got a phone call. 219-845-1100. That's our number here, 219-845-1100. You want to take this live?
Take it live, count. All right.
Hey, caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hey there, Bob. I don't want you to take this call dead, so make sure you take it live.
Oh, that's a good one, John. As much as we've used that term, I don't believe you've ever come up with that comeback before.
Well, you know, I just think you take it live, or, you know, better take it live than take it dead. But, yeah, you know, listening to your experience you had yesterday with that investigation and bumping into the count last night telling me about it, what was the consensus of all four of you guys after you left there? I mean, was this, where would you rank this? I mean, this was this maybe the most, if not most, the more interesting or the most, you know, the most stuff you got out of an investigation in quite a while. I don't, you know, I'm sure you did a lot. I don't know how many, but, you know, where did this rank last night? You know, up the ladder, so to speak.
So we're still going through evidence, specifically the audio stuff, because we're running recorders in just about every room, and then we still need to see if our EVP session, once we get the recordings back from that, it'll be more able to do it. But just based on the findings we had, I would say it was a pretty interesting investigation, all things considered. It wasn't a dead night, all pun intended. Not the craziest investigation. We didn't have things flying off the walls at us, but it was definitely definitely a shattersome night. You know what I mean? There's nothing in there that was going to harm us by any means, which, you know, as I always tell people when they watch the ghost hunting TV shows and whatnot, that when you what's the word I'm looking for? When you're doing these investigations, people think that you're always going to get attacked by a spirit, and it's just not the case. I think this is just a former member hanging around looking for their last call on drinks.
I really don't know, so, Bob. Is it more that we couldn't really narrow it down? I mean, it could be one member, two members, three members. The land that was there before was just open land, so it could be something even before the club days.
Exactly. Know? There was the weird figure that was crawling on the ground on the SLS camera. Remember that count?
Yeah. I mean, was that a child? I don't know, but or could have been anything. But yeah, I mean, I don't go. You guys go on more investigations than me. But from being there yesterday, I mean, you know, stuff was happening, Bob. There was some. There's definitely something going on there at Club Cayuga. I can't say 100%. For sure what's going on. But there's something.
Now,
going
folks,
on.
I do need to tell you before we continue. This is a private club. You cannot just wander in there doing investigations.
Unless you're invited.
Yeah, you can't just waltz in there and go do your thing. It is a private club, but they did give us permission to talk about it. So,
thanks. Bob, I'm glad you guys. I'm glad you guys, you know, found some vibes. You know, in there last night, and I hope Bill's listening, because, you know, he's actually the one that brought this up. You know, I mean, I can't say I really had that much knowledge that there was some things going on over there, you know, as he mentioned. He seemed more knowledgeable because he was, you know, he was quite interested in you guys possibly doing something over there. So, Bill, I hope you're listening, and maybe you could call in with your thoughts on what happened last night. So,
if not, we'll give him a rundown down the line about it.
Yeah, so I mean, he might be listening. So anyway, sounds good, Bob, and I'll keep listening to the show.
Thank you so much, John. We appreciate you.
219-845-1100, that number is. Now, Steve brought up an interesting point yesterday, Bob. You know, you guys go on all these investigations. There are some places that, you know, have tours going through them every weekend or every week or whatnot, visitors, paranormal investigators. But places like this, Club Cayuga, whatnot, the old WJLB studios, you know, some of these places that where you get invited to, a special invitation to do a little investigation. Sometimes you get more hits with that because the spirits really, you know, they're not used to people really going through there and kind of trying to reach out to them, I guess you could say. correct? You tend to find that sometimes places like this and, you know, places where people don't travel really to investigate tend to get more, maybe more, I guess, activity.
Right, 100%. And let me tell you, definitely a it was a good night.
I wonder why. I mean, ghost at like the, you know, when we mentioned the old Crown Point jail cell has several investigators. You think the spirits are like saying, oh, geez, another group already? I mean, how many times do we have to make some sounds for these people? Or
oh, great. Yeah, no.
You don't think it's like that?
I don't know. That's a good question, because, you know, there's a lot of places that have it. Like, I was just at Whispers Estate, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a common place that usually people investigate week after week. And I had interesting results there. I think it just depends. I mean, the fact that we were the first group in there, or the second group in there, realistically, that was doing some work, really, it could really be an interesting thing, because, you know, think of it that a spirit can recognize this and say, oh, no, I could finally get in touch with my, I can finally get an opportunity to talk to somebody that's still kicking around.
I'd be interested. I mean, Steve, I know when you guys are going through those voice recordings, so I'll be interested if there's any hits on that. I also got to give a shout out to, you know, besides the folks at Club Cuyahoga, Art and all those guys yesterday, just a fantastic group of guys, again, doing a lot for the community and keeping that institution going. Thank you to them, but also thanks to Pete Greist of Northwest Indiana Paranormal. I mean, geez, Pete knows his stuff, Bob. He proves it time and time again. He knows his stuff.
Oh, Pete's a genius. Not to mention, he's a great investigator. He's very intelligent. He's very down to earth and just a very big sweetheart. And that's, you know, a big help when you're doing this kind of work. Some people are just not easy to work with. So in this case, Pete was just the easiest person in the world always to work with. I'm just blessed to have that opportunity to work with somebody so good.
Tons of equipment.
Just like yourself and Steve there.
Well, thank you, Bob. I lack all that equipment. Pete rolled up with, I would say, what would you say, like 20 backpacks there, Bob?
At least like 10. He had the bags and some boxes, and here I roll up in my one doctor bag full of equipment.
You had a bag. Steve had a few bags, but Pete, he rolled in with a... If he travel, I mean, he's traveling with all that stuff, too. He just doesn't stick around here. He goes from state to state. So, again... just a crazy amount of equipment. But you know what, Bob? That's what you do. You put some stuff in each room and you see what you get at the end of the day or end of the night. And if anything pops up, the more equipment, I guess you could say, the more chance you could have a chance of finding something. So all in all, Bob, I say it was a very successful night over there.
I would say so. Now, Count, we have kind of an unorthodox show today, so we're going to move right into it here. Would you like to discuss how Bob After Dark works for any new listeners?
How does Bob After Dark work?
So we have two segments in the show. The first is the weird spooky news of the week. That's where me, the Bob, and you, the fans, go scouring the internet and looking for news articles that relate to the weird, the unusual, and the downright spooky. Anything from weird advances that borderline on science that borderline on science fiction, or maybe ghosts or spirits being caught on camera in interesting places, or, you know, the ever wonderful blurry photo of cryptids that might make it into a newspaper. We go scouring and looking for that stuff. And today I have two news articles for us, and then we're going to be diving into the lore of the week. So, Count, are you ready for the spooky news of the week?
I'm ready as I ever been, Bob. Hit me with it.
All right, so our first one's actually absolutely terrifying, and I need you to know that I brought up this link as I was as we were talking and getting ourselves prepped, and I've been staring at this JPEG ever since because I was afraid of clicking out of it.
Yeah.
Our first article comes to us from CNN Science from Taylor Nicole, N-I-C-I-O-I-L. So anyway, it's a newly discovered fungus that turns cave-dwelling spiders into zombies.
Cave-dwelling spiders into zombies?
Are getting turned into zombies by a fungus. Okay. I know that sounds like a B-movie title, like spider cave spider zombies from Mars. No, it's not that. This is an actual article from CNN Science, so how about we dive right into it, Cal? All right,
let's dive into it.
All right. So scientists in Europe have identified a previously unknown species of fungus that turns cave spiders into, and I quote, zombies. The fungus lures them out of their webs before instigating an ultimately an untimely death, and then uses the spider's corpses to spread its spores. The newly discovered species, named Gibulia antiborolia, or Boroli, which is GIBELLULAATTENBOROUGHII, acts in a similar way that the zombie ant fungus, seemingly manipulating its prey to move and move to a more suitable spot for the fungus to spread, according to a study published on January 24th in the journal Fungal Systematics of Evolution. Do you have a subscription to that account?
You know what? I used to, but I canceled it. I just wasn't reading anymore. But I used to be a big fan. I used to be a big fan of it.
But the way that in which fungus affects the arachnid's brain is still a mystery, and a multitude of questions remain about the fungus's evolutionary pathway and ecological impacts. We know very well that the ants, the wasps, and very few other examples, and now it is in a different family, so it's an origin of the of behavior manipulation, said the study co-author Dr. Hona Agio, J-O-A with the little swiggle O, A-R-A-U swiggle J-O. And this is a doctor at the Natural History Museum of Denmark and an assistant professor at the University of Copenhagen. It's something really interesting, and that's not super common in the parasitic world. The finding opens up new research and opportunities and to better understand animal controlling fungi, and illuminates the diversity of fungi yet to be discovered, researchers say. The newly found species of larger branch of fungi that exclusively inspects spiders. Researchers observed a different type of species than it was in Brazil. And this was, it's interesting because the last time they talk about this was from 2022. But now we're looking at it where this thing is now in 2025, you know, moving it with around with spiders, where previously it was just ants or something like that. But no, this thing's moving full on spiders to spread its spores.
Well, Bob, that's alarming.
Hashtag panic take.
Yeah, maybe that's why I got rid of that subscription to that magazine, because I just didn't want to read about stuff like this. But Bob, you know, we got enough to worry about in this world. This is just one more thing on our plate that we got to be concerned about. Who would have guessed in 2025 this would be a thing that we have to worry about, Bob? I don't know. What do you think it spells for us? You think it spells doom?
I mean, it's not controlling human corpses yet, so no. we're in good
but,
hands.
I mean, I
would say just don't.
Step.
I would say just don't die around these caves where there's cave spiders and fungus. You know.
Now, can they leave? But can they leave the cave?
We don't want to talk about that.
That's what I'm concerned about. Well, I'm concerned about them leaving the cave and coming up here.
I'll tell you, I learned a valuable lesson from a very from an interesting scientist in a movie called Jurassic Park, Dr. Ian Malcolm, yeah. Where he says life finds a way.
Life finds a way. Yes. Well, do you ever go spelunking?
No, I refuse. I'm not. You know, maybe if it was like a guided tour with like lights and a professional, but no, man, I could spelunking solo. That's like the most dangerous hobby I feel like you could possibly get into, like by yourself.
Yeah,
so
yeah, nope. People do it. They live on the edge, I guess, but you know,
no, they do.
Not for
no,
us.
Man, with my luck, I'd get stuck.
Yeah, don't go spelunked. Don't go spelunking.
If you're gonna do it in a controlled environment, you know, or I guess go do what you want to do, but not me.
No,
it's one of the few times where I'll be like, nope, not gonna do it.
Not gonna do it. No. Fascinating, Bob.
All right. Are you ready for our next news article?
Hit me with it.
All right. This is written by Sammy Goeslawyer, Sammy Goeslawyer. This comes to us from The Guardian. And this is our last news story, and it's Spooky Kettles and a Girl in White, Adele's Scary Mansion, Not at All That's Haunting the Sussex Village. Owners claim the singer blighted sale of the property she once rented in Partridge Green has no shortage of ghostly tales. So let me read this to you as we discover the haunted property that once belonged to singer Adele.
Really? Okay.
Yes. At first, it was a strange rumblings that would wake her. Then bright lights would fill bedroom as a face appeared, looking down at her. Her husband, who worked nights, never believed her until one day he saw it too. Shaken by the sightings, the couple sold the cottage and moved far away from the Hartridge Green, a quaint, isolated village in West Sussex. 30 years later, a short distance away from where these nighttime hauntings took place, the village welcomed a surprising new arrival. Adele, fresh off the heady success of her second album, 21, moved to the Lock House, a grand mansion hidden up a winding country road. In a 2012 interview, she cheerily gave CNN journalist Anderson Cooper a tour of the home, which she said used to be a convent. In between clips of Adele playing Angry Birds and a pair of starting the impromptu cooking show entitled Rolling in the Dough, good pun, she remarked that the house was also quite scary. These off-the-cut comments have now been come to light in a that could result from the mansion being converted into three houses and a cottage. So all of this is being brought up to light now, and the owners have said that they have struggled to sell it because Adele blighted the property by saying it was haunted. And the singer never directly called the house haunted. So they're having trouble selling the property because it's haunted. And different countries have different cultures, but here in America, those properties don't typically stay. Especially if somebody says that Adele owned it and said that it was supposedly haunted, but I think it was, she never called it haunted. She said that she had some eerie encounters, but people believe that it was haunted.
Yeah.
So now they might be forced to split this property up into three homes versus one.
Yeah.
So regardless of how scary Adele found the property, the village overall has no shortage of spooky tales and ghostly visits. Not all of them have taken human form. Apparently, there's a cat ghost there, said Bethany Isles, 28, front manager of the Green Man, a 19th century pub situated on the side of a very long, leafy road. I'm not going to get involved, but we can just coexist with one another. Isles recounted one spooky tale from another former member of staff when she was leaving the lock. She thought she had seen movement in the kettle turn on, and there was no one else in the building, meaning a tea kettle would be, you know, just going in the background. While the village's paranormal activities are not a surprise to Isles, she said that the whole not wholly convinced. When you're in an old building, especially when it's windy, doors can creak, and in our kitchen the wind blows, the door can move. That doesn't mean that there's a ghost, it just means that there's a breeze, she said. The paranormal sightings in Partridge Green and its surrounding villages are rarely random and usually have traceable links to past lives and events. The spooky cottage that could keep its owners awake before they fled was once the scene of death and terror. On one night in July 1941, a German plane was shot down over the home, which was then used as three smaller cottages. A woman living in one of the houses heard a noise and picked up her baby as the aircraft exploded outside. The engine crashed through the roof and landed on the bed. The crash spluttered oil and flames in other surrounding cottages, causing them to also catch fire. The body of the pilot was found wedged in the rafters in one of the cottages. If this particular house has a past life, there may be a well higher chance of it being a sighting, said Graham Duhame. The 86-year-old has documented more than 50 paranormal sightings in the area, including the tale of this particular haunted area. He worked at the Natural History Museum for 30 years. As he approached retirement, Duhame visited a medium with his wife, which left a lasting impression on him. He said to me, I've got a lady who's passing by and she sends her love and she's lost her little finger on her right hand. And I went cold. That was my aunt who I last saw in 1952 who lost her pinky finger on her right hand, he said. Since moving to the new area a short distance away from Partridge Green, he said that he's heard vivid testimonies from dozens of locals. One woman looking after the cottage said a bloke dressed in an 18th century soldier would often loiter on the stairs and in the hallway. A gardener who tended to a nearby pub told this guy that a Victorian girl dressed in white would sit on the windowsill as he worked, and he saw her hundreds of times. Hauntings usually happen at homes, but sometimes they could be more in an unexpected places. And according to the gentleman, the former Longines in a supermarket in Henfield, which was sold off in 2023, was ridden with paranormal activity. Boy, that was haunted, and there was a hell of a lot of stuff going on in there, he said. So, interesting stuff there. Count Adele's property in the surrounding area might be a lot of haunted area, but she says that it could be kind of spooky, but people might be taking it the wrong way. What do you think? #countstake.
Yeah, well, you know what? Ghost cat, that sounds pretty interesting. I mean, how do you really pinpoint that? You have a ghost cat, I guess. Could be a ghost dog or a ghost iguana. But the other takes back to the old question, Bob. If a house is haunted and it goes up for sale, do you have to tell people, is that supposed to be advertised, it's haunted? Or is that the make or break deals, I guess you could say? Do you have to be honest? Like, listen, this house has some paranormal activity going on. That's your choice if you want to keep on pursuing this buying opportunity. But we never really got a clear-cut answer, I feel, about that. I mean, that's really, I guess, some people buy homes and then they find out they're haunted. So much like Adele's house, you can buy it and then realize it's haunted.
Exactly. Now, do you think that people kind of blew her testimony a little out of the water and it made it an interesting one?
Yeah, it could be that too. I mean, she is a famous singer as well, so that kind of ties a nice bow on it. But, you know, she could have just been, maybe she was just having a vivid dream or something.
Absolutely.
Sure. Could be anything. We got to go there and investigate, I guess.
Oh. So those were our spooky news of the week, Count. I just want to say, thank you for giving us your take, as always.
Yeah, thank you, Bob.
All right. Now, are you ready to dive into the lore of the week, Count?
Yeah.
All right. You know what we haven't talked about in a long time?
What's that?
The SCP Foundation.
The SCP Foundation, Bob.
Do you remember when we've done a couple episodes on this in the past? Because February used to be Creepypasta Month,
yeah.
And would you like to tell the fans at home what the creepypasta is? And we're not talking about haunted spaghetti.
No. Now, to my knowledge, what the creepypasta is, it's a, and I don't know if this is the exact definition, Bob, but kind of like lore that has to deal with, you know, maybe video games or some weird things that were not right, and maybe like a TV show or whatnot. Am I getting to the point here with people? Like,
you are,
you know, like,
so creepypasta is usually just a term, copy pasta, that's been passed down from internet person to internet person. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that it's, you know, it's a spooky online story, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of these are blatantly fake, but yeah. It's interesting because you look at actual paranormal figures and their correlation in the creepypasta world. For example, Slender Man himself is a creepypasta, and there has been real life sightings of this thing. So how do you explain that?
How do you explain it?
I think it's a mass hysteria, but you know, some people claim that the Slender Man is a real entity, even though we have, you know, documentation from the guy who created him online saying, no, I actually created this thing and it's blown out of proportion completely and, you know, is now this really big online entity. The SCP Foundation is a collective of these. Think the X-Files, where there's three classes of these things, which is safe, meaning that the object or area or whatever it might be isn't necessarily dangerous, but it has anomalous properties. Euclid, meaning that it could potentially be dangerous in a situation if not held in containment. And Keter, meaning that if it's an object class Keter, it's a world-ending event if not properly, completely taken care of. The SCP Foundation stands for Secure, Contain, and Protect, and it is a massive, massive collection of thousands of different kind of spooky stories of these different objects and creatures and things that have an entire database online. So pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of eerie when you kind of read some of this stuff.
Yep. So the first one we want to talk about is SCP-97, object class Euclid. SCP-97 is contained within the limits of the property where it was initially discovered. Zone SCP-097. So this is a property, a big area. The property is surrounded by an eight meter trail, concrete block fence fitted with barbed wire and security camera systems. Satellite images of zone SCP-097 are to be doctored, removing all traces of the area. Any and all new plant growth outside the containment area are suspected to originate from it, from within the SCP, is a sterilized through application of boiling salt water and or incinerated. Absolutely all abnormal behavior is to be reported back to Dr. Bridges, as one of the characters in the mythos, within 10 minutes of the occurrence. If any personnel or their families experience hallucinations or thematically related dreams outside of any containment, they are to contact Dr. Bridge to schedule treatment. Localities surrounding SCP-097, specifically redacted, are to be monitored from the 1st of April until the 1st of November every year for affected civilians. Medical establishments dealing with sleep abnormalities are to be monitored for signs of SCP-97's influence. Civilians below the age of 16 encountered alone within a 1 square kilometer zone SCP-097 are to be taken into Foundation custody and are to be treated with a Class B anesthetic and an amnesia, and to be returned home or the nearest police station. Personnel tasked with the return of civilians are to avoid public exposure, and each agent is to be assigned a cover story to follow if they encounter civilians en route to the destinations, to see Staff 3 for Level 3 for details. The morning after the first frost of the year, a team of 25 agents armed with agricultural tools are to enter SCP-097 and to clear away the outer plant matter. The process is not to continue past dark. So, description of what this thing is, because it sets the mood. SCP-097 is a 10-acre area of the land in the state of Redacted in the Midwestern United States, and it's an abandoned remains of Redacted County Fair 1969, an area approximately about 5.4 square miles. Structures within the SCP area exist in a state of moderate disrepair, inconsistent with the expected age of the environment. The center of SCP-097 lie within the remains of a 1956 GMC pickup truck, majority of which crushed beneath the colossal pumpkin of an unknown subtype. Henceforth, we call it SCP-097-01. The 097-01 stands approximately about 24.3 feet tall and about 26.8 feet in diameter at its widest. Current estimates put SCP-097-01 at approximately about 33,000 pounds, and this pumpkin remains roughly in spherical shape instead of spreading out under its own weight, as would be expected for a plant this size. The remaining portion of SCP-097 is overgrown with several dozen varieties of pumpkins, with the 70 subspecies yet to be identified. So, interesting fact, it is a fairground that has been overtaken by strange cases of pumpkins, and growing 33,000 pound pumpkins at that. So how we're going to rate these is I'm going to ask Count Panic how spooked he is after hearing the story. So okay. Count Panic,
on a scale from one to
one, so one being to five being oh my god,
so five, one so to five.
One to five. So you have an abandoned amusement park with pumpkins everywhere.
That's it, though. I mean, it's the abandoned amusement park with pumpkins everywhere.
Yes.
Not jack-o'-lanterns, just straight up pumpkins.
Yes. Now, here's the thing. Yeah. Between April and November each year, the area within SCP-097 has produced a large number of anomalous rangings. These pumpkins are sentient, along with assorted other crops grow with, on, and around the remains of the 1969 fairgrounds, creating a maze-like arrangement of plant life. And the average height of with the walls is 1.6 meters, though this varies from year to year. So these things, things make walls, and you're stuck wandering through these areas with 33,000 pound pumpkins.
Okay. So now we're getting a little deeper here. So wait, can you leave eventually, or no, you're stuck?
You just got to find your way out of this.
But there is a way out, right?
Sometimes they say there's seven people die every year going in there to go explore.
Well, now that you told me that, I'm putting it at a five. It's horrifying. Just wandering around a music park with pumpkins. How do people just die? They just can't find their way out?
Yeah, they can't find their way out.
Ah, you know what? That is terrifying. Bob, we have a phone call here.
Okay, let's take it live. All right. Take it live versus dead, as John said.
Yeah, caller, you're on the air.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, Bill.
Yes, sir. Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm listening. I never know how to catch you. Last few weeks, had basketball games, so yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, and, that's unfortunately life.
Well, I don't know. That's what the people want. I mean, if there's a good game on, I listen to it. But I've been listening to this show, and I caught the early part for Club Cuyahoga, and I started to umpire there, so I did a lot of games on the small field and the big field. So, and I've been in that clubhouse, in their building. So that's kind of interesting. It was interesting.
Yeah. So, Bill, I mean, from what we you've been listening, what we gathered, something definitely going on over there, Bill. So your hunches, along with other hunches, were correct.
Yeah, I a lot of times after the game, man, they shut the lights and or out there, I like to walk the field and so forth. But I'm not saying you get a little energy, but who knows?
Who knows? Something going on.
Who knows? Yeah. Exactly. Well, Bill, we appreciate you.
Thanks for tipping us off.
We appreciate you calling in there, Bill.
Well, yeah, I would have, but when it gets cold like it is, I stay in the house. But when it warms up a little bit, I'm out.
No problem.
You can listen on the road when it's nice outside. Yeah,
but it's good hearing you guys and all that. And like I say, it seems like you've had an interesting, night last night. And so I'll go with that.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
Sounds good. Thank you, Bill. We appreciate you.
Well, listen, you guys take care and take it easy, and I'll listen to you next week. I hope.
We'll be back.
All right, Bill. Take care. We'll be here.
Okay. You too. Bye.
All right. Bye. Unless there's a game on that, we won't. We'll be on Jed TV.
We'll be on Jed TV regardless. And I'll be back in studio next week, everyone.
You know what, Bob? It's a little different in the studio. There's a new table and a couch.
There's a couch in the studio?
So you could do the show on the couch if you really want.
Is it the same couch?
Yeah. It's the same couch.
Oh, my goodness.
You'll see it when you get here. It'll be fun.
Do my show from a couch.
You can lay on the couch and do the show.
I could be the next Elvira.
There you go.
We did the show from the couch too.
Your dream. We also have another phone call.
Oh, we do? Yeah. Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Take it live. Hey, caller.
How you guys doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, we're doing good.
This is Art.
Oh, Art.
Art, how's it going?
Great. I had a good time last night.
Yeah, once again, thanks for having us. It was a fun time out there.
There was a lot of spirits at the bar and outside of the bar.
Bob is a fan of both, right, Bob?
Spirits, man. That's my favorite.
Yeah, we were all really impressed with the professionalism of NWI Paranormals and all the fancy equipment you had and the results you conveyed to us. So all in all, it was I think a great night.
Now, has anything? Did we know for sure, Art? We all left kind of rather quickly at the end. You know if a beer was left out, or is that still got to be done? Because there might be some upset spirits next time you go because there's no beer out there.
I cannot confirm and deny since I was not the last one out of the club.
Okay.
but hopefully that was taken care of.
Got to make sure. We don't want to upset any spirits, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially past club members. You don't want to upset a past club member.
Exactly, exactly.
But no, a great time. And you guys do, again, as I mentioned, a lot of great things for the community as well. Club Cuyahoga, well, run since the 30s, but that building since 76. And, yeah, for sure something going on there, Art. So keep us posted, though, if you experience anything else there.
I will. Let me know if, what the returns on the EVPs or all the recordings for the voice stuff that you guys do, too. Let me know about that.
Of course, we certainly will, Art, and we appreciate being able to come in there yesterday. We'll have to come back again in the near future and get some video evidence next time.
All right. We'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Take care.
Talk to you soon, Art. Thank you.
Yeah.
Man, we got a call from the guy himself. Yeah. How nice.
He's watching on the Jet TV. I'm curious, Bob, what Steve gathers from that, too, because you never know. You leave the room. And you think that's it, on to the next room, but something could be lingering and maybe pick up on something. Pete Greist has a great one from, and we played that on the air, a great one from the Little Red Schoolhouse. He played it for us once again yesterday. Clear as day. And a lot of these times you'll get like maybe a whisper or something, a words you can't make out. You think there's something.
This is clear as day.
He had that one that said, help me, from the Little Red Schoolhouse. And that's got to be the most clear EVP certainly I ever heard. Even on fancy television shows that go ghost hunting, nothing clear as that.
That one's one of the best EVPs I've ever heard, and that's saying a lot because I hear thousands of these things. You know,
I put that as a number five as a terrifying scale. I mean, help me. I mean, that's kind of like help you from what? You gotta learn more there. What's going
Absolutely.
On? I mean, to help you from.
All right, Count, you ready for a couple more SCPs here before we turn it over for the evening?
Sure. So I'm going with five because people are dying in the amusement park with the pumpkins. So
they're being turned into pumpkins as well.
Okay, That's a five.
That's a five. So you're already terrified.
Well, Bob, if you're guaranteeing my safety is not guaranteed, of course I'm going to put out a five. I don't be turned into a pumpkin. That's a five.
So. Well, we're only going to get worse from there, Cal, because the next one is an object class Keter, meaning this is an end of the world scenario, and I'll go with the description first. And this is SCP-149 is a breed of mosquito which carries a strain of the retrovirus here and referred to as SCP-149-A that mutates, regenerating human cells in the fertilized mosquito eggs. SCP-149-A is injected directly into the bloodstream when it feeds. When the egg is quickly works on the meniscus of the cells, wrapping the DNA, the first set of cells bred from these changed instructions closely resemble cysts and are concentrated in the lining of the esophagus and sinuses. Upon dissection, however, these cysts are revealed to be filled with SCP-149's larvae, and the cysts are acting as a protective casing against external forces. SCP-149 appears to go through its maturity cycle in a matter of hours, and by the time the subject feels any sort of effects, the first generation of SCP-149 is already grown inside the subject's body. SCP-149 primarily achieves exodus through the mouth and nostrils, occasionally being diverted through the sinuses to escape through the eye sockets. Infection by 149 is fatal, and chance of infection have been estimated for 50% for just one bite. So count 1 through 5.
Wow.
This mosquito that lays eggs in your bloodstream and creates cysts up and around your entire body for this thing to just, you know, for mosquitoes to exit out your eyes.
I don't want that either, Bob. I mean, none of these things are, you know, things that you want, but, a five, Bob. Yeah, put that at five.
Absolutely.
I think these are all right. Fives, but go ahead. Hit me with the other one.
Okay, Kyle, I got one for you. All right, for our final one of the evening. This is SCP-354.
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
SCP-354 is a pool of red liquid discovered in northern Canada. The liquid of a consistency similar to that of human blood, hence the name the blood pond is what it's nicknamed, but it's not a biological nature. The pool does not have any definite banks, soil mixes with the liquid until it's at a certain point there is more soil than liquid and the ground is mostly solid. The liquid becomes denser as one descends deeper into the pool, and if the pool has a bottom, it has yet to been reached. Periodically, entities emerge from the pool and attempt to escape its enclosure. Thus far, nearly all creatures emerging from 354 have been extremely hostile and very dangerous. 354 was first discovered and redacted by survivors of a plane crash who encountered 354 by chance. 354 had developed into a local urban legend before the Foundation personnel arrived to deal with the threat. After locating the source of the legend, the SCP personnel were set up Watchtower Epsilon 38 to monitor the pool and deter future travelers from finding it. 354 was classified Euclid until its properties were further discovered. 1400 hours on blank, you know, redacted, an unidentified entity emerged from 354. Contact with the watch station was lost. Mobile task force was dispatched to deal with the entity, and was eventually successful. All personnel within the place were found dead, and Area 354 was subsequently constructed to contain 354. So this thing spits out creatures that are all that range in different different sizes and is a pool that looks like human blood, but it's not, and it's real thick. So count 1 through 5. How scary is the human pool?
5, Bob. These are all 5s, I'd say.
Oh, I mean,
you don't want to risk it with any of these scenarios. So we're gonna put them all at 5, and no one's greater than the other. But, I mean, I guess if I would choose the least, I think I would have my best chances would be with that pumpkin, I'm sure. The pumpkin maze at the abandoned amusement park. I might have a fighting chance with that, but the other two, I don't know if I could escape it. The other one, I might have a fighting chance. But they're all 5s.
Now count. Oh, go on.
They're all 5s.
They're all 5s. You just, across I love when I ask you to rate things and you just say they're all terrifying.
They're all regardless. Terrifying, Bob.
You have the pumpkin maze amusement park, and then you have the mosquito that lays eggs in your bloodstream, and then you have a blood pool that spits out apocalyptic creatures.
Yeah, so you're not really no happy endings here. Nothing like that.
No. Now, Colin, I just want to say thank you for letting me do the show from home today. It's been just kind of a wild, crazy adventure over the past few weeks, so looking forward to be back in the studio next week.
For sure, Bob. The couch is here for you to lay on while you do the show, I guess.
I will not be doing the show laying. I might do a bit on the couch, but I'm not going to be doing the show.
I mean, you can honestly sit on the couch if you want to do the show. It's up to you. But there is a little table there, too, as well. It's kind of like Johnny Carson set.
I would be falling asleep on the couch. you'd be watching me deck and nap.
You wouldn't be the first. You wouldn't be the last.
No, I wouldn't be the first. I've napped on that couch plenty of times.
But not while it's in the studio, when it was in the...
No, not when it's on in front of a camera, in front of people, you know?
If that couch could talk of all the people that took a nap on it in the history of WGOB, oh my goodness. You could auction off that couch. How many stars have slept on that couch from WGOB? It would sell for hundreds of dollars on
tens of dollars,
something like that on eBay, but that's for next week there, Bob.
Would you like to buy a couch that can Bob After Dark slept on? It's go $5.
You could sign it. Everybody could sign it. It could be a thing.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah. Now, Colin, I just want to say thank you again for joining us today and talking about last night and everything. You truly are the central nervous system of Bob After Dark.
The central nervous system. We got to get t-shirts that say that. Yes.
Count You're me. Like the mitochondria of Bob After Dark.
I'll take it. Yeah.
All right. Do you have any closing words for our audience this evening?
Stay warm out there. We're still maybe a There's a, as we're taping this, tomorrow is still going to be another chilly day. It's nice. It's weird when you see the forecast coming up and you're excited to see 20-degree weather, Bob. When you see it and no wind chill factor, when it's just in the 20s, you're like, wow, a heating spell going on here.
Heat wave.
Yes. So, but stay warm for the folks out there, and it'll be nice soon enough outside.
Sounds good. Thank you, everybody, for watching and we're listening. To Mom, I just want to wish you sweet dreams, and to Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing, in a TIFF, no matter where you are in the world. I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody, and remember the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.